Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today as we switch gears and talk about remembering and sharing cultural traditions. And here in studio is Doug Miller of Folklore Village in Dodgeville. Folklore Village celebrating its 40th anniversary year. And a pleasure to see you, Doug. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. It's great being here.
And Ann Pryor is the Folk Arts Education Specialist for the Wisconsin Arts Board and a founding member of Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture. Ann, nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much, Jim. It's great to be here.
What do people see, Doug, when they arrive for the first time at Folklore Village and its 94-acre site?
Well, the first thing is that you're out in the country. You're going to see rolling farm fields and dairy cattle. And when you first pull into Folklore Village, it's almost like you've pulled into your grandparents' farm. And you look around, you start to see, well, boy, here's a big activity center. Here's a prairie restoration. Here's some historic buildings. So right away, you kind of get that feeling. Maybe you're at a nice small crossroads community when you come to Folklore Village.
Mm-hmm. It sounds great. And 40 years of activity.
Yeah, 40 years. It started in a one-room schoolhouse in 1968 on the Folklore Village, what became Folklore Village property. And it was started with the idea that we need to be very mindful of traditions. We can't take them for granted. Not only mindful of our own, but also that we need to really appreciate and understand traditions if we're going to appreciate and understand cultural diversity.
Mm-hmm. It's been 10 years since Wisconsin celebrated its sesquicentennial when folklore was just all abuzz here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things with the Midwest Folklife Festival that's coming up is an opportunity for Wisconsin to once again shine a light on the wonderful traditions that are in Wisconsin and in the upper Midwest.
And you're a founding member of Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture. Tell me what goes on with the teachers and the local culture.
Well, you know, you mentioned the 10 years since the sesquicentennial, and things have things existed before then, and they've been building since then, and so many things have come out since those heady days when folklore was all abuzz, as you say. So one of the things has been really increasing efforts to work with teachers and have them look at what is all around them. It's kind of the work that Doug does out at Folklore Village. He has teachers come out there all the time, and then Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture is another kind of outreach effort along the same way, to kind of take a step back and take a look around and see what are this rich cultural traditions that are right around you that are often so hard to see because they're so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
It's often easier to see what's going on when there's a contrast, when somebody from another place comes to a local area, then they see things with new eyes. And so what we try to do is take off those blinders of familiarity and, okay, what's all around us? And so with Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture, we have a wonderful coordinator, Debbie Kometz, who's been working on this for 3 years to build community around with teachers in different parts of the state. We've been doing workshops. We've had conferences. The key thing that we've been doing lately with a new partnership is offering cultural tours throughout the state and throughout regions of the state. And this has been just a terrifically rich opportunity to go into local communities, visit with people, hear their stories, get a window view into their lives and the cultural richnesses that are right there. And then the teachers see this and then can go back and look at their own home community with new eyes, with this new kind of ethnographic understanding, and then make transitions from that material into their classroom. So it's been working really well. It's pretty exciting.
Ann Pryor of the Wisconsin Arts Board, Folk Arts Education Specialist, and founding member of Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture. Doug Miller of Folklore Village in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, celebrating its 40th anniversary year. What are some of the cultural traditions that you and your families practice? Doug, why don't we start with you? Just, you know, come up with something that seems important to preserve in the heritage of the family.
I'd say probably first and foremost is music. My grandma, who was born in 1897, loved to just punctuate a conversation by singing a little bit of a gospel tune or some song that she thought was relevant at that moment. So I grew up with singing as something that was just a very common thing. So I started singing young and became a self-taught musician. And so that's kind of the thread that runs through my life that I can pull on and reach back and connect. Mm-hmm. And that's a real important part of traditions that I think in our culture now we're seeing somewhat that gap. And that is, how does one generation connect to the previous or to the next generation? And it's really those traditions; those are the lines of communication. And we often think of it as hidden in plain sight. You don't really notice it until you step back and go, "Wow, that's for me." Like for me, that's my link to my grandma. Whenever I strum this string, it's connected to her end, even though that she's passed on.
And Anne, are you a musician too?
Gosh, no, but I dance.
So is that the cultural tradition that you cling to?
Well, you know, all of my grandparents were immigrants. And so some cultural traditions that people have in their lives are ethnically based and religion and comes into that too. But all of my grandparents were immigrants from Ireland. And so when we would have family gatherings, there was always music, and my mother and her sister would start doing step dances that they had learned as kids. And so we grew up in a very Irish-identified household and community and family. And so how that has continued and changed, because tradition changes. It doesn't always stay the same. Not all people who have and share a tradition use it in the same way. So now what we do is we don't have dancing right in the house, but go to Kaylee's in the Madison or Milwaukee community and do dancing there, or pull out the special Irish foods that we grew up with, like O'Cannon or Boxty, and have them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, at our house, it was six-handed euchre for every occasion.
And, absolutely.
And so we don't do that anymore. I just don't have that opportunity. And that's one of the things that I always think of when I think of family gatherings is there's going to be some euchre played along the way.
So back in 98, when we were celebrating the sesquicentennial, and we took there were 120 traditional and ethnic artists that went to D.C. To represent Wisconsin. And one of the things that was there on the National Mall for the Smithsonian Festival was a Northwoods Tavern. And we had euchre and sheep's head playing there. And all of these former Wisconsinites who were now living in the D.C. area would come over and say, "Oh, euchre, I miss euchre. I can't find anyone here to play with me. Oh, can I please play?" And we had tables filled with, D.C. folks playing sheep's head and euchre who were missing it so much.
It was quite a time out on the mall there, because what do you know, it had gone out, and we did a show out there as well during that time.
Yeah.
And I know that they were cooking up some bratwurst and really didn't know how to cook bratwurst. And after the show, Michael Feldman got one that was not quite so done, and felt that afterwards.
You
knew you weren't back in Wisconsin
at
that time. And what are the traditions that are important in your family? We'd love to know. You give us a call in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234 as we talk with Doug Miller of Folklore Village and Ann Pryor of the Wisconsin Arts Board. The Midwest Folklife Festival is coming up August 23rd and 24th from noon to 7 p.m. each of those days. Admission is free. And the festival is a cooperative partnership, is it not, Doug?
Yes. After the after Wisconsin had their sesquicentennial, Iowa had theirs, Minnesota had theirs. I think there was a realization within folklore programs in all three states that here we've made this platform for all of these wonderful traditions that we have. The festival's over. What do we do? You know, it just wasn't right to just put them in a box and wait until the next two decades pass. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was born to have a rotating festival, and between Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota originally. Now Illinois is in the partnership and Minnesota's not. But so every year it rotates between those three states, and we're really honored at Folklore Village that we've hosted the Wisconsin one each time the cycle comes around.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like a multi-ethnic program, just looking at the roster of guests who are going to be appearing.
Definitely, definitely. We try to show not only traditions you would expect in Wisconsin, but also the real diversity that's here now. So that diversity really reflects not only history, but more recent history. And it's just a beautiful quilting of cultures and people.
Mm-hmm. And if people come there, is it just they listen to music or they listen to speakers? What else will be going on?
Well, one thing with our festival is you go to where each artist is set up and get a conversation going. Mm-hmm. And we'll have two quilters at the festival, one representing Mexican-American traditions, another African-American traditions. And if you're a quilter, talk to them. Find out, you know, hey, why did you choose those colors? What do you incorporate in your quilts that mm-hmm. is a tradition or what's new to you? But really strike up dialogues. People coming to the festival become an important part of the festival. It's not passive. It's very interactive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anne, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So going around among the artist display tents is just such a wonderful experience. And then there are also participatory workshops and hands-on sessions built into the schedule. So, for instance, from Iowa, there's a large and wonderful Bosnian folk dance troupe that is coming that's going to not only perform but also teach. And so that will be going on Saturday, which will be really wonderful. One of the new immigrants that Doug referred to earlier, for instance, in the early 90s, there was a large Tibetan resettlement effort in the upper Midwest, and Madison is host to a large and significant community of Tibetans. And so one of the monks from the local community, the Venerable Nawang Chajor, will be out there demonstrating at his display tent how he makes sand mandalas. But then also then on, I think it's Sunday, over in the children family area, he'll be letting kids try dispersing that sand with these metal funnels that he uses. And so it's that kind of thing. You get mm-hmm. to try
and
your
when
hand.
When will that take place again?
When Lama Nawang is going to be doing his hands-on sand mandala will be on Sunday from 1:30 to 2:15.
So if children are interested in art, why, that'd be a great place to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I see hands-on drumming, so yeah. Do you have to bring a drum or drums provided?
There are going to be drums galore.
Yeah.
If you have a drum, bring it, but okay. Otherwise. And
well, there's two local men who are Tani Diakite from Mali and then Jam Vivier from Ghana. Jam is a master drum maker. So, and he's adapted to his new life in the upper Midwest by using chainsaw carving, which is not a traditional Ghanaian way to make a drum, but he really likes how that is used here. So Jean will be demonstrating how he makes a drum, but then he and Tani will be doing this hands-on session. Yeah, and letting and then also we have a Puerto Rican cuatro group from Chicago who's coming to the festival, and there's a significant percussion presence in their
What is
group.
A Quattro group?
Do you want to talk
No,
about?
You go ahead.
Okay, Quattro is a stringed instrument. It's kind of the national instrument for Puerto Rico. It's very important as a cultural identity piece among Puerto Rican culture. And so this group, vocalists, Quattro, percussion, and I think flute also. And so they'll be performing on
Sunday, yeah.
Okay. And so one of their percussionists will come over and join the two African drummers, and we'll have this cross-cultural hands-on drum session, which should be pretty cool.
It sounds great. We'll talk more about it after we check on the latest news. We're remembering and sharing cultural traditions today with Doug Miller of Folklore Village in Dodgeville, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary year. Ann Pryor is the Folk Arts Education Specialist for the Wisconsin Arts Board and a founding member of the Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us as we continue to talk about remembering and sharing cultural traditions with Doug Miller of Folklore Village in Dodgeville. You can find out more about what they're doing at folklorevillage.org. Ann Pryor is the Folk Arts Education Specialist for the Wisconsin Arts Board, a founding member of the Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture. And Ann and Doug, thank you very much for coming in and sharing information with us today.
Thank you, Jim.
Ann is also recognized in her own right for being the spouse of Steve Ackerman, who is our regular weather guy, one of the two weather guys, the last Monday of each month. And Steve is also on the program of the Midwest Folklife Festival, which is occurring August 23rd and 24th. And his performance, I believe, is on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, you know, over the years, I've learned a little bit about meteorology from hanging out with him, and he's absorbed some folklore over the ways, and he's actually been in a few folklife festivals at the Smithsonian and also at Folklore Village. So this will be the second time that he's in the Midwest Folklife Festival talking about local weather, but really he loves to hear people from the area, just like what he does on this show, you know, tell their stories. I saw this, and or here's this pattern that I've observed, and what does that mean? And is that really a pattern, you know, that you know about too? And so, you know, it's that sharing of stories, that sharing of observations that is at the heart of a lot of cultural tradition, and the festival is just a fabulous place to do that. You want to say who else is on the panel that Steve's going to be on?
Well, it's weather and water, so what's the water aspect of this?
Well, Tim Blotz, who's a local dairy farmer, is also a water witcher. And so he's brought out when people are trying to find a good place to dig a well, or maybe they're looking for metal pipes that are underground. He can do that, too. And one of the neat things with Tim is that he uses a pickaxe. We're out in lead mining area, so there's a lot of things that have to do with that, people growing up in that environment. And he'll take a pickaxe and hold it in front of him with one end of the pickaxe in the palm of one hand, and above that, the other end, holding the other hand holding the other end of the pickaxe. And then the handle just sticks forward. And as he walks forward, when he comes to water, the pickaxe end of the handle will swing over the line of where the water is. And that's a tradition that he learned from his father, and it just amazes me every time I see him do it.
So he and Steve will be sharing a platform together,
right,
talking about weather and water, and it should be very, very interesting.
And people can just chime in, too, that somebody in the audience, right, with those narrative sessions, they can become a part. Again, it's very interactive.
We'll talk more about activities at the Midwest Folklife Festival, which is occurring at Folklore Village.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. We've got some people waiting, including Michelle in Manitowoc. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Let's see. I'd love to feel included in these rich traditions, and I hope I don't sort of bum people out here. But my story is that my mom was a single mom, and she was really isolated from friends and family and focused on our day-to-day practical needs, and I've sort of felt a void regards to tradition in our family. And my question has to do with creating traditions that don't feel contrived. Mm. Example is, for our children, I created a tradition where we put a candle on the floor and the children walk around one time for however year old they are. And it's really quite beautiful. And then they pause and we read a story about on the day you were born and talking about things they've accomplished over the years, each year that they walk around the candle. And yet the bad news is that we've sort of fallen off the boat in regards to that tradition, because I think it's really hard to sort of start these things. And I just wanted to hear your response to that.
Well, bravo for working at it and getting it started. Yeah, traditions require space. And you can think of people that maybe don't celebrate something like Thanksgiving the way that they used to, and people get spread apart and they don't get together. So there are challenges there. But if we think of how those traditions can keep us together and pass on to the next generation, just keep trying. Those ones that are the most meaningful, you'll make time for. And the kids will remember. In my family, our children are all grown up now, and we see them doing things that they learned at home. And it's just, you know, I just say amen to them. But what you started with the candle, that's just beautiful. I really like that.
Yeah. I totally agree. It's anything but contrived. It just sounds beautiful. And, you know, what a nice way to look back and honor all the accomplishments or events in that year. It made me think of something that we do. And this is something that, you know, as our kids got older, they would complain and say, oh, you know, I don't want to, but I pushed. And sometimes that's what it takes, too, to maintain. And this was something that I started. And every year on Thanksgiving, we would sit around for a little bit, and I would play stenographer and elicit from everyone in the family what they were thankful for that had occurred during that past year. So it's that same kind of thing that you were just describing, Michelle, about the candle, like looking back, taking stock, and saying thank you in a very narrative way.
Yes. Well, thank you.
All right. Good luck, Michelle. Thank you very much. Let's go to Art in Fifield. Art, what's on your mind?
Good morning. My family has a dietary custom. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, was born to a German sea captain and his wife, who were farming in eastern Iowa. They were Lutheran. And at that time, the Lutheran Church, as the Catholics used to do, observed certain holidays by abstaining from having meat. So on the vigil of Christmas, the day before Christmas, this family in Iowa in the 1800s had oyster stew. My grandmother, who's of course gone forever, never missed. My mother, who would be well over 100, never missed during her lifetime. I'm 80, and I have never missed having oyster stew, even when I served on active duty in the Navy during the Korean War. My children, my grandchildren, all participate in this, and I have two great-grandchildren who are a little bit young for oyster stew, but we do it in memory of great-grandparents.
I married into oyster stew, so yeah, I know that tradition well.
And when my parents were alive, Christmas Eve, it was oyster stew.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that my two brothers and myself didn't want any of the oysters. We just wanted the broth, and Dad would gladly ladle out the broth for us and save all the oysters for himself.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, thanks very much for sharing that, Art.
Thank you.
Great tradition.
Now, someone who grew up on the East Coast in an Irish family, I don't know about oyster stew. Mm. Can either of you guys explain it a little bit? I mean, where it comes from and why Christmas Eve? And
no, I can't.
I don't know either.
That's
the
role.
An answer for that. It was a tradition for them, and then it became a tradition for our family.
Wonderful.
But when the parents passed on, then that stopped.
Yep.
What I enjoyed about, in addition to the stew itself, are talking about it, was the story that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you, when you're looking at traditions, those stories are such a big part. And when you stop and start telling where it came from, why we like to do it, then you're really talking about, these are things I value, or that were valued in my family or my community. So that's a real important part of folk life.
Let's go to Bill next in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Bill.
Howdy. Lighthearted, but food again. We always had a fresh leg of lamb, fresh sweet corn, and then the topper was rhubarb pie.
And what was this for?
This was just whenever we get together, that's what we do.
We have
a running bridge game, and everybody plays, and we have lamb and fresh sweet corn and rhubarb pie. And the rhubarb is the real kicker there. I once stood at an airport in Phoenix. We were picking up a lady coming in from Sauk City, Prairie du Sac, actually. And I had a big sign that said, "No rhubarb, no ride." And as the people came out, you could tell who was from the Midwest, because they would all give you a high five. And the East Coast and the West Coast people would look at you like,
"Oh, they would just scratch their heads, wouldn't they?" Yeah.
So Bill, rhubarb is certainly a local.
Thanks for sharing that. We appreciate it.
That's great.
One of you have similar kind of tradition involving food.
Well, Bill brings up one point of regionality, and that's something that actually the festival is looking at. We're celebrating the Upper Midwest, the shared cultures of, you know, Eastern Minnesota, Eastern Iowa, Northern Illinois, and Wisconsin, and looking at what is it that makes us have this shared cultural identity. And then food. Food is such an important part of traditions that maintain because they're so tasty.
Speaking of traditions and tasty, let's go to Leslie in Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Jim. I'm laughing because I too married into the oyster stew tradition, and I finally got brave enough. I was going to eat an oyster for the first time, but I made the big mistake of cutting it in half first.
Yeah.
Now I'll never eat one.
No, you don't want to do that.
Inside.
You don't want to do that. You just want to let it slide down and enjoy
it. Yeah, right.
It.
But we do have other traditions with food that occur during hunting season. Since I've known my husband 30-some years, that we just have to have certain foods, and that's what we eat only around hunting season. Like, well, we have to have popcorn balls. So the guys all are so fanatic about not getting any weird scents on them, and they're so fussy about their hunting clothes and all this and that, but they'll go out with a popcorn ball in their pocket. So that's kind of a tradition that we have, just the different foods during hunting season.
Right. Leslie, thanks very much for sharing that. We appreciate hearing from you.
That's a great story.
Like to join in, the number 263-1890 in Madison, 800-642-1234 is our toll-free call. We're talking with Doug Miller of Folklore Village and Ann Pryor of the Wisconsin Arts Board. And one of the things coming up that we've talked about is the Midwest Folklife Festival, August 23rd, 24th, noon to 7 p.m. each weekday. Admission is free. A festival, a cooperative partnership between Folklore Village, the Wisconsin Arts Board, the Center for the Study of Upper Midwest Cultures, the Iowa Arts Council, and the Illinois Arts Council. I think I said each weekday, and it's Saturday and Sunday.
That's right, yeah.
And there are special activities going on for teachers, and what are some of the things that teachers would find showing up?
This year what we're doing is highlighting certain sessions that are running through both days of the festival. So Saturday and Sunday, we have a special track for educators called Pass It On. So hoping to feature certain artists and certain skills and techniques, methods that teachers can take back and apply to their own teaching. So for instance, on Saturday at 3:15, Mark Wagler is going to lead a workshop on best practices in interviewing, and so how to do interviews, which is such a key part of the work that we do leading up to putting something like the festival together, and then how to take those kinds of things, that kind of information, and work with it in your classroom. Or on Sunday, for instance, at 1 o'clock, Ruth Olson's going to lead a session exploring the idea of cultural symbols. So talking with this diverse group of artists, a Syrian calligrapher who does beautiful Arabic calligraphy over from Milwaukee, or Sedanka Medina, who does Slovakian wheat weaving. So what are the important symbols? What are the aesthetics that make a difference in that? And how would that relate to kids in a classroom and to the kind of work that teachers do?
Doug, tell me about some of the performers who are going to be appearing, let's say, on Saturday, August 23rd.
Well, one of the groups that we love to present is Brian Bruggen and the Mississippi Valley Dutchmen. And what I like about Brian's group is that his family has had bands in Wisconsin since the time of the Civil War, pretty close to that. So there have been Bruggens playing for Wisconsin dancers for over 130 years. Mm-hmm. And Brian's just one of the, I think, at least three active Bruggen-related bands. So it's great having them there and playing such regional tradition for Southwest Wisconsin, that great music. Another group that's going to be there is the Wisconsin Old Time Fiddlers Association. And this is an informal group that has all these different fiddlers, some from that literally grew up learning their instrument at house parties when their fathers or mothers were playing for those house parties. And it's not uncommon for there to be three or four musicians in that group that are in their 70s or in their 80s, and some of these people have played together for 20 years. So it's always a treat to have them there, because they're those house parties were sort of the backbone of homemade music in our area, the Southwest Wisconsin. But on top of that, Frank Montano, a wonderful Ojibwa, a flute builder and a musician. He's just great to hear him play. Just close your eyes and you feel like you're right up on Lake Superior, and the loons are with you. We're also going to have a wonderful group from Milwaukee, the Queens of Harmony. They played for the Wisconsin Folklife Festival in 98 and for the Smithsonian Festival.
I recall them. They're fine.
Yeah, so they'll be there. So a lot of diversity in those groups.
Let's go back to the phones. June in Milwaukee's next. Hi, June.
Hi. I just wanted, first of all, I just tuned in a little while ago, so I'm not really sure what the festival is you're talking about, and I'd love to have you repeat that information. But the other thing is, I'm married into a family who had a tradition that started in Lent of noodles and prunes. And the first time my husband suggested that I make it, I thought he was nuts. And what you do is you boil the noodles, the prunes in the morning and let them soak in their own juices all day long. And then you come home and you make the noodles and you put breadcrumbs on top. And it actually is very delicious, and it's become a family favorite.
We'll have to give it a try.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
June, appreciate hearing from you. And David is in La Crosse. Hi, David.
Hi there. How are you? Can you hear me?
Good. Yes, of course.
All right. Well, we have a pretty interesting tradition. I grew up on a farm, and every Christmas Eve at midnight, the youngest child, I'm the second of eight, would get to go out to the barn and ask the oldest animal on the farm a certain number of questions based on how old the child was. And then, of course, the child would decipher what the answer to the question was. And basically, the questions were predictions of the upcoming year. And it has a surprisingly successful rate of about 62% of the time the animal's right.
That's great.
That is great.
It would be about, early spring, hard summers, dry summers, anything. It could be about whether the horse was going to have a male or female. It was just any kind of tradition. And I have no idea where it comes from. My family's just been doing it for a long time. Have you heard of such a thing?
I have not.
Yeah, it's new to me, but it sounds great.
It does.
Yeah, it's new to us, but we're going to pursue it.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks.
All right, David. Thank you very much for your call. And let's go back to the previous caller who wondered about the Midwest Folklife Festival. It is occurring August 23rd and 24th at Saturday and Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. each day. Admission is free. It's held at Folklore Village. And for people who are unaware of the location, let's spell it out for them, Doug.
Folklore Village is straight west of Madison, between Ridgeway and Dodgeville, on County Highway BB, a half mile south on the road. So it's pretty easy to get to. And once you're there, lots of signage. Yeah.
So if you're coming from the Milwaukee area, for instance, you'd be able to find it that way. Doug Miller and Pryor are guests. And let's go to Sherry in Springbrook. Hello.
Good morning. I had a started tradition in my family when my husband worked different hours all the time and couldn't be home for the kids' birthday parties. So we always had birthday parties for breakfast because he was always home in the morning.
Oh.
So we would tell them, what would you like for your birthday? And one year my son wanted a bicycle, so we said, oh, the bicycle will appear on the table in the morning. He never believed this, but when he got up, he will never forget it.
Oh.
And then they could go to school every day on their birthday and tell the teacher they had ice cream and cake for breakfast to shock the teacher. But we did that all the while they were growing up, so their dad never missed any of their parties.
Sounds great to us.
They had a good time.
They'll remember that their whole life.
Yeah.
Yes,
indeed.
They will. They do. They're 50 years old, and they still remember it.
Oh, Sherry, thanks very much for that memory. And one more from Diane and DePere. Hi, Diane.
Hi. As I was listening to the program today, I was thinking we don't have any traditions. I mean, we just don't. And as I sat and listened to the people calling in, yes, our family does do the, you know, the deer hunting routine, and it's like, you know, big deal. The oyster stew, that's just what we do. I never thought of it as a tradition. Grandmother giving each child a quilt when they reach a certain age, never thought of it as a tradition. It's just something we do. And then the type of flowers that you grow in your yard, everyone has to have, you know, a peony that came from grandma's, you know, bushes. And I just really appreciate that you did this because I never thought of them as traditions. It's just what we do.
You're welcome, and that's exactly why we have things like folklife festivals and do projects like Wisconsin Teachers of Local Cultures. There are these wonderful things that are hidden in plain sight, and if we have a way to begin to look at them and see the connections we get from them, it's your life just gets richer, your story gets sweeter.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you. The artist demonstrations that are going to be going on, several of them are both days, some are each day, but Swiss paper cutting, occupational wooden fish baskets, junk art sculptor, which goes along with the first part of our show today when you're talking about Dr. Evermore. So we've got these artists, and people are encouraged to interact with them during those demonstrations.
You bet, yeah. And they're out there from noon to 6 both days, and you can just you could spend all day talking to just one of them if you'd like, or just move from one to the other, go to the performance stage, go to the church for a talking session that you can be a part of. There's so many ways you can interact with the festival, but it's at your speed, how you what draws you, what resonates with you, what you're curious about. It's a wonderful treasure hunt.
Mm-hmm. And the last one of these in Wisconsin, was that 10 years ago? Or
The last one was 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
We hosted it in 2005.
So now back in 2008, bigger and better than ever, I assume.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And again, it's August 23rd and 24th. That's a Saturday and a Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. each day. Admission is free, and that's at Folklore Village, Dodgeville. And you can go to folklorevillage.org to see the program, see what else is going on at Folklore Village. Doug, thank you very much for being here today.
My pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
And Ann Pryor, Folk Arts Education Specialist for the Wisconsin Arts Board, a founding member of Wisconsin Teachers of Local Culture. Do you have a website that you're willing to talk about?
Absolutely. So the Teachers of Local Culture website is csumc.wisc.edu/WTLC. And what all that means is one of
I have to leave it there.
Okay.
They'll have to go figure it out. Thanks very much for being here, Doug Miller and Pryor. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about Going Green in 8 Weeks, Ready, Set, Green, and Rob Lawrence, the author of The Early Years of the Les Paul Legacy.